Jessica needs them held today. He looked at her for a long moment, as if he could see through everything she'd said, but finally nodded. She ignored the disappointment and concern in his face, his tone, as he said, "All right." Lahaba sighed.
"You're being mean today, Bibi, and don't blame it on your cycle."
Seated at the table in the heart of the gallery's library, Bryce massaged her brows with her thumb and forefinger. "Sorry." Her phone lay dark and quiet on the table beside her.
"You didn't invite Athi down here for lunch."
"I didn't need the distraction." The lie was smooth. Hunt hadn't called her on the other lie either, that Jessica was watching the gallery cameras today so he should stay on the roof. But despite needing him, needing everyone at arm's length today, and despite claiming she couldn't look for the horn, she'd been combing over various texts regarding it for hours now. There was nothing in them but the same information over and over. A faint scratching sound stretched across the entire length of the library. Bryce pulled over Lahaba's tablet and cranked up the volume on the speakers, blasting music through the space. A loud, angry thump sounded. From the corner of her eye, she watched the Nock swim off, its translucent tail slashing through the dim water. Pop music. Who would have thought it was such a strong deterrent for the creature?
"He wants to kill me,"
Lahaba whispered.
"I can tell."
"I doubt you'd make a very satisfying snack," Bryce said. "Not even a mouthful."
"He knows that if I'm submerged in water, I'm dead in a heartbeat."
It was another form of torture for the sprite, Bryce had realized early on. A way for Jessica to keep Lahaba in line down here, caged within a cage, as surely as all the other animals throughout the space. No better way to intimidate a fire sprite than to have a 100,000-gallon tank looming.
"He wants to kill you, too,"
Lahaba whispered.
"You ignore him, and he hates that. I can see the rage and hunger in his eyes when he looks at you, Bibi. Be careful when you feed him."
"I am." The feeding hatch was too small for it to fit through anyway, and since the Nock wouldn't dare bring its head above the water for fear of the air, only its arms were a threat if the hatch was opened and the feeding platform was lowered into the water. But it kept to the bottom of the tank, hiding among the rocks whenever she dumped in the stakes, letting them drift lazily down. It wanted to hunt, wanted something big, juicy, and frightened. Bryce glanced toward the dim tank, illuminated by three built-in spotlights. "Jessica will get bored with him soon and gift him to a client," she lied to Lahaba.
"Why does she collect us at all?"
the sprite whispered.
"Am I not a person too?"
She pointed to the tattoo on her wrist.
"Why do they insist on this?"
"Because we live in a republic that has decided that threats to its order have to be punished, and punished so thoroughly that it makes others hesitate to rebel too." Her words were flat, cold.
"Have you ever thought of what it might be like without the Asteri?"
Bryce shot her a look. "Be quiet, Lahaba."
"But Bibi—"
"Be quiet, Lahaba." There were cameras everywhere in this library, all with audio. They were exclusive to Jessica, yes, but to speak of it here. Lahaba drifted to her little couch.
"Athi would talk to me about it."
"Athi is a slave with little left to lose."
"Don't say such things, Bibi,"
Lahaba hissed.
"There is always something left to lose."
Bryce was in a foul spirit. Maybe there was something going on with Rune or Juniper. Hunt had seen her checking her phone frequently this morning, as if waiting for a call or message. None had come. At least, as far as he could tell, on the walk to the gallery. And judging by the distant, sharp look still on her face as she left just before sunset, none had come in during the day, either. But she didn't head home. She went to a bakery. Hunt kept to the rooftops nearby, watching while she walked into the aqua-painted interior and walked out 3 minutes later, with a white box in her hands. Then she turned her steps toward the river, dodging workers and tourists and shoppers all enjoying the end of the day. If she was aware that he followed, she didn't seem to care. Didn't even look up once as she aimed for a wooden bench along the river walkway. The setting sun gilded the mists veiling the bone quarter. A few feet down the paved walkway, the dark arches of the Black Dock loomed. No mourning family stood beneath them today, waiting for the Onyx boat to take their coffin. Bryce sat on the bench overlooking the river and the sleeping city, the white bakery box beside her, and checked her phone again. Sick of waiting until she deigned to talk to him about whatever was eating her up, Hunt landed quietly before sliding onto the bench's wooden planks, the box between them.
What's up?
Bryce stared out at the river. She looked drained, like that first night he'd seen her in the Legion's holding center. She still wasn't looking at him when she said,
Danica would have been 25 today.
Hunt went still.
It's today's Danica's birthday.
She glanced to her phone, discarded at her side.
No one remembered. Not Juniper or Fury, not even my mom. Last year they remembered, but I guess it was a one-time thing.
You could have asked them.
I know they're busy, and
she ran a hand through her hair.
Honestly, I thought they'd remember. I wanted them to remember. Even just a message saying something bullshitty like, I miss her or whatever.
What's in the box?
Chocolate croissants, she said hoarsely. Danica always wanted them on her birthday. They were her favorite.
Hunt looked from the box to her, then to the looming bone quarter across the river. How many croissants had he seen her eating these weeks? Perhaps in part because they connected her to Danica the same way that scar on her thigh did. When he looked back at her, her mouth was a tight, trembling line.
It sucks, she said, her voice thick. It sucks that everyone just moves on and forgets. They expect me to forget, but I can't. She rubbed at her chest. I can't forget. Maybe it's fucking weird that I bought my dead friend a bunch of birthday croissants, but the world moved on, like she never existed.
He watched her for a long moment. Then he said,
Shahar was that for me. I'd never met anyone like her. I think I loved her from the moment I laid eyes on her in her palace, even though she was so high above me that she might as well have been the moon. But she saw me too. And somehow, she picked me. Out of all of them, she picked me.
He shook his head, the words creaking from him as they crept from that box he'd locked them in all this while.
I would have done anything for her. I did anything for her. Anything she asked. And when it all went to hell, when they told me it was over, I refused to believe it. How could she be gone? It was like saying the sun was gone. It just, there was nothing left if she wasn't there.
He ran a hand through his hair.
This won't be a consolation, but it took me about 50 years before I really believed it. That it was over. Yet even now.
You still love her that much?
He held her gaze, unflinching.
After my mother died, I basically fell into my grief. But Shahar, she brought me out of that, made me feel alive for the first time, aware of myself, of my potential. I'll always love her, if only for that.
She looked to the river.
I never realized it, she murmured, that you and I are mirrors.
He hadn't either. But a voice floated back to him.
You look how I feel every day,
she'd whispered when she'd cleaned him up after Micah's latest assignment.
Is it a bad thing?
A half smile tugged at a corner of her mouth.
No, it isn't.
No issue with the Umbra Mortis being your emotional twin? but her face grew serious again.
That's what they call you, but that's not who you are.
And who am I?
A pain in my ass. Her smile was brighter than the setting sun on the river. He laughed, but she added,
You're my friend, who watches trashy TV with me and puts up with my shit. You're the person I don't need to explain myself to, not when it matters.
You see everything I am, and you don't run away from it.
He smiled at her, let it convey everything that glowed inside him at her words. I like that.
Color stained her cheeks, but she blew out a breath as she turned toward the box.
Well, Danica, she said. Happy birthday.
She peeled off the tape and flipped back the top. Her smile vanished. She shut the lid before Hunt could see what was inside.
What is it?
She shook her head, making to grab the box, but Hunt grabbed it first, pulling it onto his lap and opening the lid. Inside lay half a dozen croissants, carefully arranged in a pile. And on the top one, artfully written in a chocolate drizzle, was one word. Trash.
It wasn't the hateful word that tore through him. No, it was the way Bryce's hands shook, the way her face turned red, and her mouth became a thin line.
Just throw it out, she whispered. No hint of the loyal defiance and anger. Just exhausted, humiliated pain. His head went quiet. Terribly, terribly quiet.
Just throw it out, Hunt, she whispered again. Tears shone in her eyes.
So Hunt took the box, and he stood. He had a good idea of who had done it, who'd had the message altered, who had shouted that same word, trash, at Bryce the other week when they'd left the den.
Don't, Bryce pleaded.
But Hunt was already airborne. Amelie Ravenscroft was laughing with her friends, swigging from a beer, when Hunt exploded into the Moonwood bar. People screamed and fell back, magic flaring. But Hunt only saw her claws form as she smirked at him. He set the pastry box on the wooden bar with careful precision. A phone call to the Ox had given him the info he needed about the shifter's whereabouts, and Amelie seemed to have been waiting for him, or at least Bryce, when she leaned back against the bar and sneered,
Well, isn't this?
Hunt pinned her against the wall by the throat, the growls and attempted attacks of her pack against the wall of rippling lightning he threw up were background noise. Fear gleamed in Amelie's wide, shocked eyes as Hunt snarled in her face. But he said softly,
You don't speak to her. You don't go near her. You don't even fucking think about her again.
He sent enough of his lightning through his touch that he knew pain lashed through her body. Amelie choked.
Do you understand me?
People were on their phones, dialing for the 33rd Legion or the Auxiliary. Amelie scratched at his wrists, her boots kicking at his shins. He only tightened his grip. Lightning wrapped around her throat.
Do you understand?
His voice was frozen, utterly calm, the voice of the Umbra Mortis. A male approached his periphery, Ethan Holstrom. But Ethan's eyes were on Amelie as he breathed.
What did you do, Amelie?
Hunt only said, snarling again in Amelie's face.
Don't play dumb, Holstrom.
Ethan noticed the pastry box on the bar then. Amelie thrashed, but Hunt held her still as her second opened the lid and looked inside. Ethan asked softly,
What is this? Ask your alpha,
Hunt ground out. Ethan went utterly still. But whatever he was thinking wasn't Hunt's concern, not as he met Amelie's burning stare again. Hunt said,
You leave her the fuck alone. Forever. Got it.
Amelie looked like she'd spit on him, but he sent another casual zap of power into her, flaying her from the inside out. She winced, hissing and gagging, but nodded. Hunt immediately released her,
but his power kept her pinned against the wall. He surveyed her, then her pack, then Ethan, whose face had gone from horror to something near grief, as he must have realized what day it was and pieced enough of it together. Thought about who had always wanted chocolate croissants on this day, at least. Hunt said, "You're all pathetic." And then he walked out. Took a damn while flying home. Bryce was waiting for him on the roof, a phone in her hand. "No," she was saying to someone on the line. "No, he's back." "Good," he heard Isaiah say, and it sounded like the male was about to add something else when she hung up. Bryce wrapped her arms around herself. "You're a fucking idiot." Hunt didn't deny it. "Is Amelie dead?" There was fear, actual fear in her face. "No." The word rumbled from him, lightning hissing in its wake.
"You..."
She rubbed at her face. "I didn't..."
"Don't tell me I'm an alpha hole or possessive and aggressive or whatever terms you use."
She lowered her hands, her face stark with dread.
"You'll get in so much trouble for this, Hunt. There's no way you won't."
It was fear for him, terror for him. Hunt crossed the distance between them, took her hands.
"You're my mirror. You said so yourself."
He was shaking. For some reason, he was shaking as he waited for her to respond. Bryce looked at her hands, gripped in his, as she answered,
"Yes."
The next morning, Bryce messaged her brother. "What's your Medwitch's number?" Rune sent it immediately, no questions asked. Bryce called her office a minute later, hands shaking. The fair-voiced Medwitch could squeeze her in immediately. So Bryce didn't give herself the time to reconsider, as she slid on her running shorts and a t-shirt, then messaged Jessaba, "Medical appointment this morning. Be at the gallery by lunch." She found Hunt making breakfast. His brows rose when she just stared at him.
"I know where we can get Crystallos venom. For the Medwitch's antidote tests," she said.
Chapter 61. The Medwitch's immaculate clean white clinic was small, not like the larger practices Bryce had visited in the past. And rather than the standard blue neon sign that jutted over nearly every other block in this city, the broom and bell insignia had been rendered in loving care on a gilded wooden sign hanging outside. About the only old-school looking thing about the place. The door down the hallway behind the counter opened, and the Medwitch appeared, her curly dark hair pulled back into a bun that showed off her elegant brown face.
"You must be Bryce,"
the woman said, her full smile instantly setting Bryce at ease. She glanced to Hunt, giving him a shallow nod of recognition. But she made no mention of their encounter in the night garden before she said to Bryce,
"Your partner can come back with you, if you would like. The treatment room can accommodate his wings."
Hunt looked at Bryce, and she saw the question in his expression.
"Do you want me with you?"
Bryce smiled at the witch.
"My partner would love to come."
The white treatment room, despite the clinic's small size, contained all the latest technology. A bank of computers sat against one wall. The long mechanical arm of a surgical light was set against the other. The third wall held a shelf of various tonics and potions and powders in sleek glass vials, and a chrome cabinet on the fourth wall likely possessed the actual surgical instruments. A far cry from the wood-paneled shops Hunt had visited in Pangera, where witches still made their own potions in iron cauldrons that had been passed down through the generations. The witch idly patted the white leather examination table in the center of the room. Hidden panels gleamed in its plastic sides, extensions for veneer of all shapes and sizes. Hunt claimed the lone wooden chair by the cabinet as Bryce hopped onto the table, her face slightly pale.
"You said on the phone that you received this wound from a Crystallos demon, and it was never healed. The venom is still in you."
"Yes," Bryce said quietly. Hunt hated every bit of pain that laced that word.
And you give me permission to use the venom I extract in my experiments as I search for a synth antidote?
Bryce glanced at him, and he nodded his encouragement. An antidote to synth seems pretty damn important to have, she said. So yes, you have my permission.
Good, thank you.
The Medwitch rifled through a chart, presumably the one Bryce had filled out on the woman's website, along with the medical records that were tied to her file as a Civitas.
I see that the trauma to your leg occurred nearly 2 years ago.
Bryce fiddled with the hem of her shirt.
Yes, it closed up, but still hurts. When I run or walk too much, it burns right along my bone.
Hunt refrained from grunting his annoyance. The witch's brow creased, and she looked up from the file to glance at Bryce's leg.
How long has the pain been present?
Since the start, Bryce said, not looking at him. The Medwitch glanced at Hunt.
Were you there for this attack as well?
Bryce opened her mouth to answer, but Hunt said,
yes.
Bryce whipped her head around to look at him. He kept his eyes on the witch.
I arrived 3 minutes after it occurred. Her leg was ripped open across the thigh, courtesy of the Crystallos' teeth.
The words tumbled out, the confession spilling from his lips.
I used one of the Legion's medical staplers to seal the wound as best I could.
Hunt went on, unsure why his heart was thundering.
The medical note about the injury is from me. She didn't receive any treatment after that. It's why the scar...
He swallowed against the guilt working its way up his throat.
It's why it looks the way it does.
He met Bryce's eyes, letting her see the apology there.
It's my fault.
Bryce stared at him, not a trace of damnation on her face, just raw understanding. The witch glanced between them, as if debating whether to give them a moment, but she asked Bryce,
so, you did not see a Medwitch after that night?
Bryce still held Hunt's gaze as she said to the woman,
no. Why?
Her eyes still didn't leave his as she rasped.
Because I wanted it to hurt. I wanted it to remind me every day.
Those were tears in her eyes, tears forming, and he didn't know why. The witch kindly ignored her tears.
Very well. The whys and hows aren't as important as what remains in the wound.
She frowned.
I can treat you today, and if you stick around afterward, you're welcome to watch me test your sample. The venom, in order to be an effective antidote, needs to be stabilized so it can interact with the synth and reverse its effects. My healing magic can do that, but I need to be present in order to hold that stability. I'm trying to find a way for the magic to permanently hold the stabilization so it can be sent out into the world and widely used.
Sounds like some tricky stuff, Bryce said, looking away from Hunt at last. He felt the absence of her stare as if a warm flame had been extinguished. The witch lifted her hands, white light shining at her fingertips, then fading away, as if giving a quick check of her magic's readiness.
I was raised by tutors versed in our oldest forms of magic. They taught me an array of specialized knowledge.
Bryce let out a breath through her nose.
All right, let's get on with it then.
But the witch's face grew grave.
Bryce, I have to open the wound. I can numb you so you don't feel that part. But the venom, if it's as deep as I suspect, I cannot use Mithridate leeches to extract it.
She gestured to Hunt.
With his wound the other night, the poison had not yet taken root. With an injury like yours, deep and old. The venom is a kind of organism. It feeds off you. It won't want to go easily, especially after so long meshing itself to your body. I shall have to use my own magic to pull it from your body, and the venom might very well try to convince you to get me to stop. Through pain.
It's going to hurt her?
Hunt asked.
The witch winced.
Badly enough that the local anesthesia cannot help. If you like, I can get a surgical center booked and put you under, but it could take a day or two.
We do it today. Right now, Bryce said, her eyes meeting Hunt's again. He could only offer her a solid nod in return.
All right, the witch said, striding gracefully to the sink to wash her hands. Let's get started.
The damage was as bad as she'd feared. Worse. The witch was able to scan Bryce's leg, first with a machine, then with her power, the two combining to form an image on the screen against the far wall.
You see the dark band along your femur?
The witch pointed to a jagged line like forked lightning through Bryce's thigh.
That's the venom. Every time you run a walk too long, it creeps into the surrounding area and hurts you.
She pointed to a white area above it.
That's all scar tissue. I need to cut through it first, but that should be fast. The extraction is what might take a while.
Bryce tried to hide her trembling as she nodded. She'd already signed half a dozen waivers. Hunt sat in the chair, watching.
Right, the witch said, washing her hands again. Change into a gown, and we can begin.
She reached for the metal cabinet near Hunt, and Bryce removed her shorts, her shirt. Hunt looked away, and the witch helped Bryce step into a light cotton shift, tying it at the back for her.
Your tattoo is lovely, the medwitch said. I don't recognize the alphabet, though. What does it say?
Bryce could still feel every needle prick that had made the scrolling lines of text on her back.
Through love, all is possible. Basically, my best friend and I will never be parted.
A hum of approval, as the medwitch looked between Bryce and Hunt.
You two have such a powerful bond.
Bryce didn't bother to correct her assumption that the tattoo was about Hunt. The tattoo that Danica had drunkenly insisted they get one night, claiming that putting the vow of eternal friendship in another language would make it less cheesy. Hunt turned back to them, and the witch asked him,
Does the halo hurt you?
Only when it went on.
What witch inked it?
Some imperial hag, Hunt said through his teeth. One of the old ones.
The witch's face tightened. It is a darker aspect of our work, that we bind individuals through the halo. It should be halted entirely.
He threw her a half smile that didn't reach his eyes. Wanna take it off for me?
The witch went wholly still, and Bryce's breath caught in her throat. What would you do if I did?
The witch asked softly, her dark eyes glimmering with interest and ancient power.
Would you punish those who have held you captive?
Bryce opened her mouth to warn them that this was a dangerous conversation, but Hunt thankfully said, I'm not here to talk about my tattoo. It lay in his eyes, though, his answer, the confirmation. Yes, he'd kill the people who'd done this. The witch inclined her head slightly, as if she saw that answer. She turned back to Bryce and patted the examination table.
Very well. Lie on your back, Miss Quinlan.
Bryce began shaking as she obeyed. As the witch strapped down her upper body, then her legs, and adjusted the arm of the surgical light, a cart rattled as the witch hauled over a tray of various gleaming silver instruments, cotton pads, and an empty glass vial.
I'm going to numb you first, the witch said,
and then a needle was in her gloved hands. Bryce shook harder.
Deep breaths,
the witch said, tapping the air bubbles from the needle. A chair scraped, and then a warm, calloused hand wrapped around Bryce's. Hunt's eyes locked on hers.
Deep breath, Bryce.
She sucked one in. The needle sank into her thigh, its prick drawing tears. She squeezed Hunt's hand hard enough to feel bones grinding. He didn't so much as flinch. The pain swiftly faded, numbness tingling over her leg, deep inside it.
Do you feel this?
The witch asked.
Feel what?
Good, the witch declared. I'm starting now.
I can put up a little curtain if you...
No, Bryce gritted out. Just do it. No delays. No waiting.
She saw the witch lift the scalpel, and then a slight, firm pressure pushed against her leg.
Bryce shook again, blasting a breath through her clenched teeth.
Steady now, the witch said. I'm cutting through the scar tissue.
Hunt's dark eyes held hers, and she forced herself to think of him instead of her leg.
He had been there that night, in the alley.
The memory surfaced, the fog of pain and terror and grief clearing slightly. Strong, warm hands gripping her, just as he held her hand now. A voice speaking to her. Then utter stillness, as if his voice had been a bell. And then those strong, warm hands on her thigh, holding her as she sobbed and screamed.
I've got you, he said over and over. I've got you.
I believe I can remove most of this scar tissue, the witch observed. But,
she swore softly.
Luna above, look at this.
Bryce refused to look, but Hunt's eyes slid to the screen behind her, where her bloody wound was on display. A muscle ticked in his jaw. It said enough about what was inside the wound.
I don't understand how you're walking, the witch murmured. You said you weren't taking painkillers to manage it.
Only during flare-ups,
Bryce whispered.
Bryce.
The witch hesitated.
I'm going to need you to hold very still and to breathe as deeply as you can.
Okay.
Her voice sounded small. Hunt's hand clasped hers. Bryce took a steadying breath. Someone poured acid into her leg, and her skin was sizzling, bones melting away. In and out and in, her breath sliced through her teeth. Oh, gods, oh, gods. Hunt interlaced their fingers, squeezing. It burned and burned and burned and burned.
When I got to the alley that night,
he said above the rush of her frantic breathing,
you were bleeding everywhere. Yet you tried to protect him first. You wouldn't let us get near until we showed you our badges and proved we were from the Legion.
She whimpered, her breathing unable to outrun the razor-sharp digging. Hunt's fingers stroked over her brow.
I thought to myself, there's someone I want guarding my back. There's a friend I'd like to have. I think I gave you such a hard time when we met up again because some part of me knew that and was afraid of what it'd mean.
She couldn't stop the tears sliding down her face. His eyes didn't waver from hers.
I was there in the interrogation room, too.
His fingers drifted through her hair, gentle and calming.
I was there for all of it.
The pain struck deep, and she couldn't help the scream that worked its way out of her. Hunt leaned forward, putting his cool brow against hers.
I've known who you were this whole time. I never forgot you.
I'm beginning extraction and stabilization of the venom, the witch said. It will worsen, but it's almost over.
Bryce couldn't breathe, couldn't think beyond Hunt and his words and the pain in her leg, the scar across her very soul.
Hunt whispered, you've got this. You've got this, Bryce.
She didn't, and the hell that erupted in her leg had her arching against the restraints, her vocal cords straining as her screaming filled the room. Hunt's grip never wavered.
It's almost out, the witch hissed, grunting with effort. Hang on, Bryce.
She did. To Hunt, to his hand, to that softness in his eyes, she held on with all she had.
I've got you,
he murmured.
Sweetheart, I've got you.
He'd never said it like that before, that word. It had always been mocking, teasing. She'd always found it just this side of annoying. Not this time, not when he held her hand and her gaze and everything she was, riding out the pain with her.
Breathe, he ordered her. You can do it. We can get through this.
Get through it, together. Get through this mess of a life together, through this mess of a world. Bryce sobbed, not entirely from pain this time.
And Hunt, as if he sensed it too, leaned forward again, brushed his mouth against hers. Just a hint of a kiss, a feather-soft glancing of his lips over hers. A star bloomed inside her at that kiss. A long, slumbering light began to fill her chest, her veins.
Burning soulless,
the witch whispered, and the pain ceased. Like a switch had been flipped, the pain was gone. It was startling enough that Bryce turned away from Hunt and peered at her body, the blood on it, the gaping wound. She might have fainted at the sight of a good 6 inches of her leg lying open, were it not for the thing that the witch held between a set of pincers, as if it were indeed a worm.
If my magic wasn't stabilizing the venom like this, it'd be liquid,
the witch said, carefully moving the venom, a clear, wriggling worm with black flecks, toward a glass jar. It writhed like a living thing. The witch deposited it in the jar and shut the lid, magic humming. The poison instantly dissolved into a puddle within, but still vibrated, as if looking for a way out. Hunt's eyes were still on Bryce's face, as they'd been the entire time, had never left.
Let me clean you out and stitch you up, and then we'll test the antidote, the witch said.
Bryce barely heard the woman as she nodded, barely heard anything beyond Hunt's lingering words.
I've got you.
Her fingers curled around his. She let her eyes tell him everything her ravaged throat couldn't.
I've got you, too.
30 minutes later, Bryce was sitting up, Hunt's arm and wing around her, both of them watching as the witch's glowing pale magic wrapped around the puddle of venom in the vial and warped it into a thin thread.
You'll forgive me if my method of antidote testing fails to qualify as a proper medical experiment,
she declared, as she walked over to where an ordinary white pill sat in a clear plastic box. Lifting the lid, she dropped the thread of venom in. It fluttered like a ribbon, hovering above the pill before the witch shut the lid again.
What is being used on the street is a much more potent version of this, she said. But I want to see if this amount of my healing magic, holding the venom in place and merging with it, will do the trick against the synth.
The witch carefully let the thread of the magic-infused venom alight on the table. It vanished within a blink, sucked into the pill. But the witch's face remained bunched in concentration, as if focused on whatever was happening within the pill. Bryce asked,
So, your magic is currently stabilizing the venom in that tablet, making it stop the synth?
Essentially, the witch said distantly, still focused on the pill.
It takes most of my concentration to keep it stable long enough to halt the synth, which is why I'd like to find a way to remove myself from the equation, so it can be used by anyone, even without me.
Bryce fell silent after that, letting the witch work in peace. Nothing happened. The pill merely sat there. 1 minute passed, 2, and just as it was nearing 3 minutes, the pill turned gray, and then dissolved into nothing but minuscule particles that then faded away too, until there was nothing left. Hunt said into the silence,
It worked.
The witch blinked at the now empty box.
It would appear so.
She turned to Bryce, sweat gleaming on her brow.
I'd like to continue testing this, and try to find some way for the antidote to work without my magic stabilizing the venom. I can send over a vial for you when I'm finished, though, if you'd like. Some people want to keep such reminders of their struggles.
Bryce nodded blankly, and realized she had absolutely no idea what to do next. Chapter 62 Jessica hadn't seemed to care when Bryce explained that she needed the rest of the day off. She'd just demanded that Bryce be in first thing tomorrow or be turned into a donkey. Hunt flew her home from the Medwitch's office, going so far as to carry her down the stairs from the roof of the apartment building and through her door. He deposited her on the couch, where he insisted she stay for the remainder of the day, curled up beside him, snuggled into his warmth. She might have stayed there all afternoon and evening, if Hunt's phone hadn't rung. He'd been in the midst of making her lunch when he picked up.
Hi, Micah.
Even from across the room, Bryce could hear the Archangel's cold, beautiful voice.
My office. Immediately. Bring Bryce Quinlan with you.
While he dressed in his battle suit and gathered his helmet and weapons, Hunt debated telling Bryce to get on a train and get the fuck out of the city. He knew this meeting with Micah wasn't going to be pleasant. Bryce was limping, her wound still tender enough that he'd grabbed her a pair of loose workout pants and helped her put them on in the middle of the living room. She'd registered for a follow-up appointment in a month, and it only now occurred to Hunt that he might not be there to see it. Either because this case had wrapped up, or because of whatever the fuck was about to go down in the committeeum. Bryce tried to take all of one step before Hunt picked her up, carrying her out of the apartment and into the skies. She barely spoke, and neither did he. After this morning, what use were words? That too brief kiss he'd given her had said enough. So had the light he could have sworn glowed in her eyes as he'd pulled away. A line had been crossed, one from which there was no walking away. Hunt landed on a balcony of the governor's spire, the central of the Comitium's five. The usually bustling hall of his public office was hushed. Bad sign. He carried Bryce toward the chamber. If people had run, or Micah ordered them out. If he saw Sandriel right now, if she realized Bryce was injured. Hunt's temper became a living, deadly thing. His lightning pushed against his skin, coiling through him, a cobra readying to strike. He gently set Bryce down before the shut, fogged glass office doors, made sure she was steady on her feet before he let go, stepping back to study every inch of her face. Worry shone in her eyes, enough of it that he leaned in, brushing a kiss over her temple.
Chin up, Quinlan, he murmured against her soft skin. Let's see you do that fancy trick where you somehow look down your nose at people a foot taller than you.
She chuckled, smacking him lightly on the arm. Hunt pulled away with half a smile of his own before opening the doors and guiding Bryce through with a hand on her back. He knew it would likely be his last smile for a long while. But he'd be damned if he let Quinlan know it. Even as they beheld who stood in Micah's office. To the left of the governor's desk stood Sabine, arms crossed and spine rigid, the portrait of cold fury. A tight-faced Amelie lingered at her side. He knew precisely what this meeting was about. Micah stood at the window, his face glacial with distaste. Isaiah and Victoria flanked his desk. The former's eyes flashed with warning. Bryce glanced between them all and hesitated. Hunt said quietly to Micah, to Sabine,
Quinlan doesn't need to be here for this.
Sabine's silvery blonde hair shimmered in the first light lamps, as she said,
Oh, she does. I want her here for every second.
I won't bother asking if it's true,
Micah said to Hunt, as he and Bryce stopped in the center of the room, the doors shut behind them, locking. Hunt braced himself. Micah said,
There were six cameras in the bar. They all captured what you did and said to Amelie Ravenscroft. She reported your behavior to Sabine, and Sabine brought it directly to me.
Amelie flushed.
I just mentioned it to her, she amended. I didn't howl like a pup about it. It is unacceptable, Sabine hissed to Micah. You think you can set your assassin on a member of one of my packs, my heir?
I will tell you again, Sabine, Micah said, bored. I did not set Hunt Athalar upon her.
He acted of his own free will.
A glance at Bryce.
He acted on behalf of his companion.
Hunt said quickly,
Bryce had nothing to do with this. Amelie pulled a bullshit prank, and I decided to pay her a visit.
He bared his teeth at the young Alpha, who swallowed hard. Sabine snapped,
You assaulted my captain.
I told Amelie to stay the fuck away, Hunt bit out, to leave her alone.
He angled his head, unable to stop the words.
Or are you unaware that Amelie has been gunning for Bryce since your daughter died, taunting her about it, calling her trash?
Sabine's face didn't so much as flinch.
What does it matter if it's true?
Hunt's head filled with roaring, but Bryce just stood there and lowered her eyes. Sabine said to Micah,
This cannot go unpunished. You fumbled the investigation of my daughter's murder. You allowed these two to poke their noses into it, to accuse me of killing her. And now this. I'm one breath away from telling this city how your slaves cannot even stay in line. I'm sure your current guest will be highly interested in that little fact.
Micah's power rumbled at the mention of Sandriel.
Athalar will be punished.
Now, here.
Sabine's face was positively lupin,
where I can see it. Sabine,
Amelie murmured. Sabine growled at her young captain. Sabine had been hoping for this moment, had used Amelie as an excuse, no doubt dragged the wolf here. Sabine had sworn they'd pay for accusing her of murdering Danica. And Sabine was, Hunt supposed, a female of her word.
Your position among the wolves,
Micah said with terrifying calm,
does not entitle you to tell a governor of the Republic what to do.
Sabine didn't back down, not an inch. Micah just loosed a long breath. He met Hunt's eyes, disappointed.
You acted foolishly. I'd have thought you, at least, would know better.
Bryce was shaking, but Hunt didn't dare touch her.
History indicates that a slave assaulting a free citizen should automatically forfeit their life.
Hunt suppressed a bitter laugh at her words. Wasn't that what he'd been doing for the Archangels for centuries now?
Please,
Bryce whispered. And perhaps it was sympathy that softened the Archangel's face, as Micah said.
Those are old traditions. For Pangera, not Valbara.
Sabine opened her mouth, objecting, but Micah lifted a hand.
Hunt Athalar will be punished. And he shall die. In the way that angels die.
Bryce lurched a limping step toward Micah. Hunt grabbed her by the shoulder, halting her. Micah said,
The living death.
Hunt's blood chilled, but he bowed his head. He had been ready to face the consequences since he'd shot into the skies yesterday, pastry box in his hands. Bryce looked at Isaiah, whose face was grim, for an explanation. The commander said to her, to the confused Amelie,
The living death is when an angel's wings are cut off.
Bryce shook her head.
No, please.
But Hunt met Micah's rock-solid stare, read the fairness in it. He lowered himself to his knees and removed his jacket, then his shirt.
I don't need to press charges, Amelie insisted. Sabine, I don't want this. Let it go.
Micah stalked toward Hunt, a shining double-edged sword appearing in his hand. Bryce flung herself in the Archangel's path.
Please, please!
The scent of her tears filled the office. Victoria instantly appeared at her side, holding her back. The Wraith's whisper was so quiet, Hunt barely heard it.
They will grow back. In several weeks, his wings will grow back.
But it would hurt like hell. Hurt so badly that Hunt now took steadying, bracing breaths,
plunged down into himself, into that place where he wrote out everything that had ever been done to him, every task he'd been assigned, every life he'd been ordered to take.
Sabine, no, Amelie insisted. It's gone far enough.
Sabine said nothing, just stood there. Hunt spread his wings and lifted them, holding them high over his back so the slice might be clean. Bryce began shouting something, but Hunt only looked at Micah.
Do it.
Micah didn't so much as nod before his sword moved. Pain, such as Hunt had not experienced in 200 years, raced through him, short-circuiting every... Hunt jolted into consciousness to Bryce screaming. It was enough of a summons that he forced his head to clear, even around the agony down his back, his soul. He must have blacked out only for a moment, because his wings were still spurting blood from where they lay like two fallen branches on the floor of Micah's office. Amelie looked like she was going to be sick. Sabine was smirking, and Bryce was now at his side, his blood soaking her pants, her hands, as she sobbed, "Oh, gods! Oh, gods!"
"We're settled," Sabine said to Micah,
who punched a button on his phone to call for a medwitch. He'd paid for his actions, and it was over, and he could go home with Bryce.
"You are a disgrace, Sabine."
Bryce's words speared through the room as she bared her teeth at the prime apparent.
"You are a disgrace to every wolf who has ever walked this planet,"
Sabine said.
"I don't care what a half-breed thinks of me."
"You didn't deserve Danica,"
Bryce growled, shaking.
"You didn't deserve her for one second."
Sabine halted.
"I didn't deserve a selfish, spineless brat for a daughter, but that's not how it turned out, is it?"
Dimly, from far away, Bryce's snarl cut through Hunt's pain. He couldn't reach her in time, though, as she surged to her feet, wincing in agony at her still-healing leg. Micah stepped in front of her. Bryce panted, sobbing through her teeth, but Micah stood there, immovable as a mountain.
"Take Athalar out of here,"
the archangel said calmly, the dismissal clear.
"To your home, the barracks, I don't care."
But Sabine, it seemed, had decided to stay, to give Bryce a piece of her vicious mind. Sabine said to her, low and venomous,
"I sought out the Under King last winter. Did you know that? To get answers from my daughter, with whatever speck of her energy lives on in the sleeping city."
Bryce stilled, the pure stillness of the Fae. Dread filled her eyes.
"Do you know what he told me?"
Sabine's face was inhuman.
"He said that Danica would not come. She would not obey my summons. My pathetic daughter would not even deign to meet me in her afterlife for the shame of what she did. How she died, helpless and screaming, begging like one of you."
Sabine seemed to hum with rage.
"And do you know what the Under King told me when I demanded again that he summon her?"
No one else dared speak.
"He told me that you piece of trash, had made a bargain with him. For her. That you had gone to him after her death and traded your spot in the Bone Quarter in exchange for Danica's passage. That you worried she would be denied access because of her cowardly death and begged him to take her in your stead."
Even Hunt's pain paused at that.
"That wasn't why I went," Bryce snapped. "Danica wasn't a coward for one fucking moment of her life."
Her voice broke as she shouted the last words.
"You had no right,"
Sabine exploded.
"She was a coward and died like one and deserved to be dumped into the river,"
the Alpha was screaming.
"And now she is left with eons of shame because of you. Because she should not be there, you stupid whore. And now she must suffer for it."
"That's enough,"
Micah said, his words conveying his order, "get out."
Sabine just let out a dead, cold laugh and turned on her heel. Bryce was still sobbing when Sabine strutted out, a stunned Amelie on her heels. The latter murmured as she shut the door.
I'm sorry.
Bryce spat at her. It was the last thing Hunt saw before darkness swept in again. She would never forgive them, any of them. Hunt remained unconscious while the Medwitches worked on him in Micah's office, stitching him up so that the stumps where his wings had been stopped spurting blood onto the floor, then dressing the wounds in bandages that would promote quick growth. No first light. Apparently its aid in healing wasn't allowed for the living death. It would delegitimize the punishment. Bryce knelt with Hunt the entire time, his head in her lap. She didn't hear Micah telling her how the alternative was Hunt being dead, officially and irrevocably dead. She stroked Hunt's hair as they lay in her bed an hour later, his breathing still deep and even.
Give him the healing potion every 6 hours,
the Medwitch ordered her. It will stave off the pain, too. Isaiah and Naomi had carried them home, and she'd barely let them lay Hunt face down on her mattress before she'd ordered them to get out. She hadn't expected Sabine to understand why she'd given up her place in the bone quarter for Danica. Sabine never listened when Danica spoke about how she'd one day be buried there, in full honor, with all the other great heroes of her house, living on as that small speck of energy for eternity, still a part of the city she loved so much. Bryce had seen people's boats tip. Would never forget Danica's half-muffled pleading on the audio of the apartment building's hall camera. Bryce hadn't been willing to make the gamble that the boat might not reach the far shore. Not for Danica. She'd tossed a death mark into the Istros, payment to the Underking, a coin of pure iron from an ancient, long-gone kingdom across the sea. Passage for a mortal on a boat. And then she'd knelt on the crumbling stone steps, the river mere feet behind her, the arches of the bone gates above her, and waited. The Underking, veiled in black and silent as death, had appeared moments later.
It has been an age since a mortal dared set foot on my isle.
The voice had been old and young, male and female, kind and full of hatred. She'd never heard anything so hideous and beckoning.
I wish to trade my place.
I know why you are here, Bryce Quinlan. Whose passage you seek to barter?
An amused pause.
Do you not wish to one day dwell here among the honored dead? Your balance remains skewed toward acceptance. Continue on your path, and you shall be welcomed when your time comes.
I wish to trade my place for Danica Fendir.
Do this, and know that no other quiet realms of Midgard shall be open to you. Not the Bone Quarter, not the catacombs of the Eternal City, not the Summer Isles of the North. None, Bryce Quinlan. To barter your resting place here is to barter your place everywhere.
I wish to trade my place.
You are young, and you are weighed with grief. Consider that your life may seem long, but it is a mere flutter of eternity.
I wish to trade my place.
Are you so certain Danica Fendir will be denied welcome? Have you so little faith in her actions and deeds that you must make this bargain?
I wish to trade my place.
She'd sobbed the words.
There is no undoing this.
I wish to trade my place.
Then say it, Bryce Quinlan. and let the trade be done. Say it a seventh and final time, and let the gods and the dead and all those between hear your vow. Say it, and it shall be done.
She hadn't hesitated, knowing this was the ancient rite. She'd looked it up in the gallery archives, had stolen the death mark from there too. It had been given to Jessica by the Underking himself, the sorceress had told her, when she'd sworn fealty to the House of Flame and Shadow.
I wish to trade my place.
And so it had been done. Bryce had not felt any different afterward, when she'd been sent back over the river, or in the days after that. Even her mother had not been able to tell, hadn't noticed that Bryce had snuck from her hotel room in the dead of night. In the 2 years since, Bryce had sometimes wondered if she'd dreamed it, but then she'd looked through the drawer in the gallery where all the old coins were kept and see the empty, dark spot where the death mark had been. Jessica had never noticed it was gone. Bryce liked to think of her chance at eternal rest as missing with it, to imagine the coins nestled in their velvet compartments in the drawer as all the souls of those she loved, dwelling together forever. And there was hers, missing and drifting, wiped away the moment she died. But what Sabine had claimed about Danica suffering in the Bone Quarter? Bryce refused to believe it, because the alternative... No, Danica had deserved to go to the Bone Quarter, had nothing to be ashamed about, whether Sabine or the other assholes disagreed or not, whether the Underking or whoever the hell deemed their souls worthy disagreed or not. Bryce ran her hand through Hunt's silken hair, the sounds of his breathing filling the room. It sucked, this stupid fucking world they lived in. It sucked, and it was full of awful people, and the good ones always paid for it. She pulled her phone from the nightstand and began typing out a message. She fired it off a moment later, not giving herself time to reconsider what she'd written to Ethan. Her first message to him in 2 years. His frantic messages from that horrible night, then his cold order to stay away, were still the last things in a thread that went back 5 years before that. You tell your alpha that Connor never bothered to notice her because he always knew what a piece of shit she was. And tell Sabine that if I see her again, I will kill her. Bryce lay down next to Hunt, not daring to touch his ravaged back. Her phone buzzed. Ethan had written, I had no part in what went down today. Bryce wrote back, You disgust me. All of you. Ethan didn't reply, and she put her phone on silent before she let out a long breath and leaned her brow against Hunt's shoulder. She'd find a way to make this right. Somehow. Someday. Hunt's eyes cracked open, pain a steady throb through him. Its sharpness was dulled, likely by some sort of potion or concoction of drugs. The steady counterweight that should have been on his back was gone. The emptiness hit him like a semi-truck. But soft feminine breathing filled the darkness. A scent like paradise filled his nose, settled him, soothed the pain. His eyes adjusted to the dark enough to know that he was in Bryce's bedroom, that she was lying beside him. Medical supplies and vials lay next to the bed. All for him, many looking used. The clock read 4 in the morning. How many hours had she sat up, tending to him? Her hands were tucked in at her chest, as if she had fallen asleep beseeching the gods. He mouthed her name, his tongue as dry as sandpaper. Pain rippled through his body, but he managed to stretch out an arm, managed to slide it over her waist and tuck her into him. She made a soft sound and nuzzled her head into his neck. Something deep in him shifted and settled. What she'd said and done today, what she'd revealed to the world in her pleading for him? It was dangerous, for both of them.
So, so dangerous.
If he were wise, he'd find somehow to pull away. Before this thing between them met its inevitable, horrible end, as all things in the Republic met a horrible end. And yet Hunt couldn't bring himself to remove his arm, to avoid the instinct to breathe in her scent and listen to her soft breathing. He didn't regret it, what he'd done, not one bit of it. But there might come a day when that wouldn't be true, a day that might dawn very soon. So Hunt savored the feel of Bryce, her scent and breathing, savored every second of it. Chapter 63.
Is Athy okay, Bibi?
Bryce rubbed her eyes as she studied the computer screen in the gallery library.
He's sleeping it off.
Mahaba had cried this morning when Bryce had trudged in to tell her what had occurred. She'd barely noticed that her leg had no pain, not a whisper. She'd wanted to stay home, to care for Hunt, but when she'd called Jessica, the answer had been clear. No. She'd spent the first half of the morning filling out job applications and had sent each and every one of them in. She didn't know where the hell she would end up. But getting out of this place was the first step of many. She'd taken a few more today. Rune had picked up on the first ring and come right over to the apartment. Hunt had still been asleep when she'd left him in her brother's care. She didn't want anyone from that fucking Legion in her house. Didn't want to see Isaiah or Victoria or any of the Triari anytime soon. Rune had taken one glance at Hunt's mutilated back and gagged, but he'd promised to stay on the pills and wound care schedule she laid out for him.
Micah went easy on him, Rune said when he stopped by at lunch, toying with one of his earrings. Really fucking easy. Sabine had the right to call for his death.
As a slave, Hunt had no rights whatsoever. None.
I will never forget about it as long as I live, Bryce answered, her voice dull.
The flash of Micah's sword, Hunt's scream, as if his soul was being shredded, Sabine's smile.
I should have been the one to shut Amelie up.
Shadows flickered in the room. Well, you weren't. She measured the potion for Rune to give Hunt at the top of the hour. Rune stretched an arm over the back of the sofa.
I'd like to be, Bryce.
She met her brother's gaze. Why?
Because you're my sister.
She didn't have a response. Not yet. She could have sworn hurt flashed in his eyes at her silence. She was out of her apartment in another minute, and barely reached the gallery before Jessica had called, raging about how Bryce wasn't ready for the 2 o'clock meeting, with the owl shifter who was ready to buy a marble statuette worth 3 million gold marks. Bryce executed the meeting and the sale, and didn't hear half of what was said. Sign, stamp, goodbye. She returned to the library by 3. Mahaba warmed her shoulder as she opened her laptop.
Why are you on Redner Industries' site?
Bryce just stared at the 2 small fields. Username, password. She typed in Defendier. The cursor hovered over the password. Someone might be tipped off that she was trying to get in, and if she did get access, someone might very well receive an alert. But it was a risk worth taking. She was out of options. Mahaba read the username.
Does this somehow tie into the horn?
Danica knew something. Something big, Bryce mused. Password. What would Danica's password be?
Redner Industries would have told her to write something random and full of symbols. Danica would have hated being told what to do and would have done the opposite. Bryce typed in, Sabine sucks. No luck. Though she'd done it the other day, she again typed in Danica's birthday. Her own birthday. The holy numbers. Nothing. Her phone buzzed, and a message from Rune lit up her screen.
He woke up, took his potions like a good boy, and demanded to know where you were.
Rune added,
he's not a bad male. She wrote back.
No, he's not.
Rune replied. He's sleeping again, but seemed in good enough spirits, all things considered. A pause, and then her brother wrote. He told me to tell you thanks for everything.
Bryce read the messages 3 times before she looked at the interface again and typed in the only other password she could think of.
The words written on the back of a leather jacket she'd worn constantly for the last 2 years. The words inked on her own back in an ancient alphabet.
Danica's favorite phrase, whispered to her by the Oracle on her 16th birthday.
The old language of the Fae didn't work. Neither did the formal tongue of the Asteri. So she wrote it in the common language. Through love, all is possible. The login screen vanished, and a list of files appeared.
Most were reports on Redner's latest projects, improving tracking quality on phones, comparing the speed at which shifters could change forms, analyzing the healing rates of witch magic versus Redner medicines. Boring everyday science. She'd almost given up when she noticed a subfolder. Party invites. Danica had never been organized enough to keep such things, let alone put them in a folder. She either deleted them right away or let them rot in her inbox, unanswered. It was enough of an anomaly that Bryce clicked on it and found a list of folders within, including one titled Bryce. A file with her name on it, hidden in another file, exactly as Bryce had hidden her own job applications on this computer.
What is that?
Lahaba whispered at her shoulder. Bryce opened the file.
I don't know. I never sent invites to her work address.
The folder contained a single photo.
Why does she have a picture of her old jacket?
Lahaba asked.
Was she going to sell it?
Bryce stared and stared at the image. Then she moved, logging out of the account before running up the stairs to the showroom, where she grabbed the leather jacket from her chair.
It was a clue, she said breathlessly to Lahaba, as she flew back down the stairs, fingers running and pawing over every seam of the jacket. The photo is a fucking clue.
Something hard snagged her fingers. A lump. Right along the vertical line of the L in love.
Through love, all is possible,
Bryce whispered, and grabbed a pair of scissors from the cup on the table.
Danica had even tattooed the hint on Bryce's fucking back, for fuck's sake.
Lahaba peered over her shoulder as Bryce cut into the leather. A small, thin metal rectangle fell onto the table. A flash drive.
Why would she hide that in her coat?
Lahaba asked, but Bryce was already moving again, hands shaking as she fitted the drive into the slot on her laptop. 3 unmarked videos lay within. She opened the first video. She and Lahaba watched in silence. Lahaba's whisper filled the library, even over the scratching of the knock.
Gods, spare us.
Chapter 64. Hunt had managed to get out of bed and prove himself alive enough that Rune Dannon had finally left. He had no doubt the Fae Prince had called his cousin to inform her, but it didn't matter. Bryce was home in 15 minutes. Her face was white as death, so ashen that her freckles stood out like splattered blood. No sign of anything else amiss, not one thread on her black dress out of place.
What?
He was instantly at the door. Wincing as he surged from where he'd been on the couch, watching the evening news coverage of Rigelus, Bright Hand of the Asteri, giving a pretty speech about the rebel conflict in Pangera. It'd be another day or two before he could walk without pain. Another several weeks until his wings grew back. A few days after that until he could test out flying. Tomorrow, probably, the insufferable itching would begin. He remembered every miserable second from the first time he'd had his wings cut off. All the surviving fallen had endured it, along with the insult of having their wings displayed in the Crystal Palace of the Asteri as trophies and warnings. but she first asked, "How are you feeling?"
"Fine. Lie."
Syrinx pranced at his feet, showering his hand with kisses. "What's wrong?" Bryce wordlessly closed the door, shut the curtains, yanked out her phone from her jacket pocket, pulled up an email from herself to herself, and clicked on an attached file.
"Danica had a flash drive hidden in the lining of her jacket," Bryce said, voice shaking, and led him back to the couch, helping him to sit as the video loaded.
Syrinx leapt onto the cushions, curling up beside him. Bryce sat on his other side, so close their thighs pressed together.
She didn't seem to notice.
After a heartbeat, Hunt didn't either. It was grainy, soundless footage of a padded cell. At the bottom of the video, a ticker read, "Artificial amplification for power dysfunction, test subject 7. A too-thin human female sat in the room in a med gown.
"What the fuck is this?"
Hunt asked, but he already knew. Synth. These were the synth research trials. Bryce grunted,
"Keep watching."
A young Drocky male in a lab coat entered the room, bearing a tray of supplies. The video sped up, as if someone had increased the speed of the footage for the sake of urgency. The Drocky male took her vitals and then injected something into her arm. Then he left, locked the door.
"Are they?"
Hunt swallowed.
"Did he just inject her with synth?"
Bryce made a small confirming noise in her throat. The camera kept rolling. A minute passed. 5. 10. Two Vanir walked into the room. Two large serpentine shifters who sized up the human female locked in alone with them. Hunt's stomach turned. Turned further at the slave tattoos on their arms, and knew that they were prisoners. Knew from the way they smiled at the human female shrinking against the wall, why they had been locked up. They lunged for her, but the human female lunged too. It happened so fast that Hunt could barely track it. The person who had edited the footage went back and slowed it too. So he watched, blow by blow, as the human female launched herself at the two Vanir males and ripped them to pieces.
It was impossible, utterly impossible, unless...
Therion had said synth could temporarily grant humans powers greater than most Vanir. Powers enough to kill.
"Do you know how badly the human rebels would want this?"
Hunt said. Bryce just jerked her chin toward the screen, where the footage kept going. They sent in two other males, bigger than the last, and they too wound up in pieces.
Piles. Oh, gods.
Another two, then three, then five, until the entire room was red, until the Vanir were clawing at the doors, begging to be let out, begging as their companions, then they themselves were slaughtered. The human female was screaming, her head tilted to the ceiling, screaming in rage or pain or what he couldn't tell without the sound. Hunt knew what was coming next, knew, and couldn't stop himself from watching. She turned on herself, ripped herself apart, until she too was a pile on the floor. The footage cut out. Bryce said softly,
"Danica must have figured out what they were working on in the labs. I think someone involved in these tests. Could they have sold the formula to some drug boss? Whoever killed Danica and the pack and the others must have been high on this synth, or injected someone with it and sicked them on the victims."
Hunt shook his head.
"Maybe. But how does it tie into the demons and the horn?"
"Maybe they summoned the Crystallos for the antidote in its venom, and nothing more. They wanted to try to make an antidote of their own, in case the synth ever turned on them."
"Maybe it doesn't connect to the horn at all," Bryce said.
"Maybe. This is what we were meant to find.
There are two other videos like this of two different human subjects. Danica left them for me."
"She must have known someone was coming for her,
must have known when she was on that ox boat, confiscating that crate of synth, that they'd come after her soon. There was no second type of demon hunting alongside the Cristallos. Just a person from this world. Someone who was high on the synth and used its power to break through our apartment's enchantments. And then had the strength to kill Danica and the whole pack. Hunt considered his next words carefully, fighting against his racing mind.
It could work, Bryce. But the horn is still out there, with a drug that might be able to repair it, coincidence or no. And we're no closer to finding it.
No. This just led them a hell of a lot closer to trouble. He added,
Micah already demonstrated what it means to set one foot out of line. We need to go slow on the synth hunt. Make sure we're certain this time. And careful.
None of you were able to find out anything like this. Why should I go slow with the only clue I have about who killed Danica and the pack of devils? This ties in, Hunt. I know it does. And because she was opening her mouth to object again, he said what he knew would stop her.
Bryce, if we pursue this and we're wrong, if Micah learns about another fuck-up, forget the bargain being over. I might not walk away from his next punishment.
She flinched. His entire body protested as he reached a hand to touch her knee.
This synth shit is horrific, Bryce. I've never seen anything like it.
It changed everything.
Everything.
He didn't even know where to begin sorting out all he'd seen. He should make some phone calls.
Needed to make some phone calls about this. But to find the murderer and maybe the horn. And to make sure there's an afterword for you and me.
Because there would be a you and me for them. He'd do whatever it took to ensure it.
We need to be smart.
He nodded to the footage.
Forward that to me. I'll make sure it gets to Vic on our encrypted server. See what she can dig up about these trials.
Bryce scanned his face. The openness in her expression nearly sent him to his knees before her. Hunt waited for her to argue, to defy him, to tell him he was an idiot. But she only said,
Okay.
She let out a long breath, slumping back against the cushions. She was so fucking beautiful he could barely stand it. Could barely stand to hear her ask quietly,
What sort of an afterword for you and me do you have in mind, Athalar?
He didn't balk from her searching gaze.
The good kind,
he said with equal quiet. She didn't ask, though, about how it would be possible, how any of it would be possible for him, for them, what he'd do to make it so. Her lips curved upward.
Sounds like a plan to me.
For a moment, an eternity, they stared at each other. And despite what they'd just watched, what lurked in the world beyond the apartment, Hunt said,
Yeah.
Yeah.
She toyed with the ends of her hair.
Hunt, you kissed me at the Medwitch's office.
He knew he shouldn't, knew it was 10 kinds of stupid, but he said,
What about it?
Did you mean